Aloha and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Yenji Denise in for Catherine Cruz. American parents are stressed. The U.S. Surgeon General recently released an advisory saying that nearly half of parents experience overwhelming stress on most days, significantly more stress than non-parents. Today, we'll explore the issue of stressed out parents with a panel of experts, all parents themselves, and take a look at intensive parenting, a style of raising children that is the dominant model in the U.S. that's highly involved, hands-on, with constant attention to kids to maximize their future success. Is that working for parents or kids? We want to hear from you. The numbers to reach us are 808-941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689 on the neighbor islands. Welcome to The Conversation. I'm Yenji Denise, and our guests in studio today are Britt Young, therapist, executive director, and founder of Explore Counseling, David Sun Miyashiro, executive director of Hawaii Kids Can, an organization dedicated to ensuring that children in Hawaii have access to high-quality and equitable education, and Marissa Kuipo-Baptista, board member of the Hawaii State Parent Teacher Association, which is the oldest and largest child advocacy group in the state. Welcome to you all. We are talking today about parental stress. We're all parents ourselves, and I'm sure we'll get to all of our children in a moment. But first, let's talk about intensive parenting, which is the dominant style of parenting in the United States. Britt, let's start with you with some definitions. What is intensive parenting?
So intensive parenting, you're right, it's the dominant state of affairs here in America. And it kind of started in the 1980s, just for historical context anyway. You know, 60s, 70s, early 80s, kids out on the street, free play, come in when the street lamps go off. And as the media started picking up on specific cases of kidnappings and very tragic events, parents started getting aware, becoming more aware that their children might be in danger. And this led to the almost constant supervision of children by adults. Could have been the parents, most likely it's a coach or a babysitter or something like that. But those days really of the free play became things of the past, and we began to now have to do things with our children because they're around all the time. And so we shuttled them from one activity to the other, whether it's piano lessons, tennis lessons, golf lessons, swim lessons, baseball. So they were constantly sort of procured or cultivated by adults. And really, that's how I think of intensive parenting. It's a style of parenting in which the adults around this child are cultivating the individual as opposed to and versus allowing the child to sort of create their own identity through free play and through non-supervised activities. So that's the very long answer. I apologize. But that's a little bit of historical context.
No, anyway. I love it. I love it. And Marissa, we know you're a mom of three teenagers. You also work with a lot of parents. How do you see this style of parenting playing out in your peer group?
Yeah, I definitely see a lot of intense parenting in Hawaii, but I think it's a mix. I think culturally, there isn't this sort of umbrella, this view sort of curating kids' lives as much in Hawaii. I think that's one reason why a lot of people choose to move and live in Hawaii, to have a little bit more of a laid-back approach. But as we see college and the stresses and pressures and, you know, the economy changing around jobs, there is more of a need to ensure that our children have the right skill set and the right connections and the right sort of environment to prepare them for that life.
Right. And so it's not enough necessarily just to play soccer for fun. You're doing it 5 days a week,
exactly.
Or you're doing it plus you have a coach and you're having to be shuttled by your parents because you're not of driving age.
Exactly.
David, you work with a lot of kids, getting them access to education and resources. Is there a benefit to this style of parenting? I mean, there must be a reason that so many folks have adopted it.
You know, it's always a balance, right? I mean, I think in Hawaii, one of the things that really is an asset is we have so many incredible community organizations. I've heard that Hawaii has some, you know, the highest per capita rates of nonprofits anywhere in the country. And I think that's borne out in looking at all the different opportunities for kids. And so, you know, in surveys for parents across the country, there's so much participation in things like after-school sports, cultural, you know, music, hula, you know, tutoring participation. So there's a lot that's kind of picked up there. And as a parent of a young child myself, I feel intensely that pressure to get my kid involved as early as possible. And my kid's not even 4 years old yet, but I've already, you know, we've looked at sports, we've looked at music and all these different kinds of options just so he can get some exposure. But I feel that intensive style that I don't think I had myself when I was a kid.
Yeah, I definitely did not grow up that way. And I want to tie it back to the U.S. Surgeon General's report that came out in August that was pretty shocking for a lot of folks. Perhaps shocking, but not surprising when you look at just how stressed so many parents feel. This report found a number of concerning findings, really about the mental well-being of parents. He spoke recently on the PBS NewsHour. Let's take a listen.
Well, parenting has always been challenging. And to be clear, and I say this as a parent myself, parenting is full of joy and meaning and purpose, but it also can be quite stressful. And I've experienced that a lot myself as a parent. What really struck me as I was doing work on youth mental health and talking to families around the country was recognizing how many parents were struggling as well. And as I dug into the data around this, I found that 48%, nearly half of parents, are saying that most days they feel completely overwhelmed by stress. That is an extraordinary number that should raise alarms for all of us. But the other thing that's important to recognize is parents are also struggling with disproportionate levels of loneliness and isolation. So about 65% of parents say that they are lonely, and that includes actually over 75% of single parents. And stress is tough on its own. When you compound it with loneliness, it can really take a toll on the mental health and well-being of parents.
Pretty interesting remarks there by the Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy. I want to get your thoughts on this, Britt, just about the findings overall. Mm-hmm. And then after that, let's drill down into that parental loneliness concept.
Mm-hmm. I wish more than anything that wasn't surprising and that I was like, oh my gosh, that's shocking. It's just not shocking because we work with families every day where the parents are coming in with extraordinary stress because, like you were saying, Marissa and David, it's not enough to accept and love your child and kind of move out of the way for them to develop. You are now hands-on. It's very expensive to be hands-on. All of these activities cost a lot of money. So what we see in our treatment rooms is extraordinary stress over, is my child going to lose out on opportunities? If I don't do X, Y, Z, does that mean they're going to be a failure? What kind of jobs won't they get? It's a lot of like this negative thinking. What won't they get if we don't do this, if we don't be on the travel team, if we're not on here? And psychologically speaking, I always tell parents, I say, what if the happiest parent is the best parent? Like, what if everything you're doing and those thousands of dollars you're shelling out for these activities is negated by you being stressed out all the time and your children growing up in that home? And so it's really important to understand the stress part of it. And like you said, the loneliness part of it too. There is a difference between feeling alone. Oh yes, I have the house to myself. I'm so alone, but people care about me. And then there is lonely. And I believe the latest numbers recently were about a quarter of Americans feel that they can't name one or two people who care about them, that they feel safe going to. That is lonely. And that's definitely different from, I have 2 hours for myself. I feel very alone in the house finally. Mm-hmm. So stress and loneliness, connection is one of those buffering concepts. If you have connection, you can withstand a lot of stress and overwhelm. Without it, you almost crumble. You're broken.
Wow. Yeah. David, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I really felt the Surgeon General's comments, you know, as a parent who had a classic pandemic baby born in December 2020. And so, you know, we didn't have family in the waiting room with us. You know, we had to do a lot of things by ourselves out of necessity. And so Hawaii is a place that is, you know, multi-generational, very much more so than a lot of other communities. And so not having the same connection to parents, great-grandparents, cousins, brothers, sisters, that I think was something we felt profoundly. And so in the absence of that in-person time that you would normally get with people, you fall to parent influencers on Instagram and products that are incredibly intensive. You want to know exactly your child's oxygen level and blood pressure? Well, you can hook this sock up to them and, you know, medical grade information. And so I think you almost get a little bit stuck in your own head and stuck with this whole ecosystem that's not based in the human, you know, physical world. And because of that, I think not just those of us who have young kids growing up, but even middle schoolers, elementary schoolers, high schoolers who had their school experience disrupted in the pandemic, they're still not kind of where they would have been otherwise.
Yeah, Marissa, I'd love to get your thoughts on that, especially given that you have teenagers at home.
Yeah, I was going to say, having three kids and trying to find that balance that you give enough attention to every single one. And as a working parent, my husband and I both work, trying to figure out who's going to soccer practice, who's doing their student government meetings, who's playing cello at school, who's going to pick them up, how are we going to get from here to there. You want to be this super parent, like David was saying, that you see online that's doing all the things and doesn't break a sweat and, you know, is just doing it just carefree. And that loneliness seeps in because as a parent, you're like, I'm doing this all by myself. How is everyone else doing it? And, you know, not breaking a sweat. I must be the one that's failing. And you kind of just, you know, spiral at that point. So it is definitely a challenge that we see here in Hawaii.
Yeah.
I was going to jump off that because there's actually something called the Stanford Duck Syndrome, which I'd never heard of before. And it relates to picturing a duck on a lake. Underneath, their little feet are going so fast. On the top, they look like super cool and collected. And that's what you're describing. And that can exacerbate, of course, the stress and overwhelm and the feeling like I'm alone and lonely in this endeavor. Yeah.
Right. I'm the only one who's doing chicken nuggets for dinner again because all I can do is preheat what I cooked yesterday and shouldn't I be serving organic food that I bought at Whole Foods, but how can I actually afford to go there?
Right. Whole paycheck, yes.
If you're just joining the conversation, we are talking about the stress of parenting in the modern age. We'd like to know how you feel this in your own lives. Join our discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. Britt, you know, let's talk a little bit about social media because, David, you brought that point in as well, that you're seeing all these influencers online. And this whole idea also, a term I heard recently of sharenting, which is, you know, that you're sharing about how your kids are the best and, you know, you got the Christmas cookies all decorated and there's no mess and they're organic, right? So talk a little bit about that comparative culture that Instagram and other social media platforms like it have really brought into our parental culture.
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, when you talk about social media, I can't help but feel like the word envy coming up over and over again. It's designed in a certain way to create envy, right, amongst other people. Now, envy historically and evolutionarily is a good thing in a way, right? We have envious feelings because that's how we move forward as a species. Like, oh, you got that nice tool. Well, I'm going to go get that nice tool. Okay, so that's how it all became a thing. However, social media really exploits that if used in the wrong way. I'm not meaning the support groups and the really, you know, nurturing places online. What I am meaning is exactly what you're saying. Look at me, look at me, look where I went for vacation, look what I can do with my kids, look where my child's going to college. You know, all of this is out there and it's designed to instill envy. And we know that that particular emotion is associated with a negative affect. It's associated with depressive feelings, certainly anxiety. And one thing I forgot to mention, which was so fascinating to me, is that intensive parenting also took off in about 1983, 1985, and that is exactly aligned with when the U.S. News and World Report came out with their college rankings. And now scholars are looking at this going, oh, we all want to get our kids there. And now there's a ranking system. Before that, you just went to a great college. Who cares? Now you've got to go to a top 50, 100 college. And so anyway, all that to say, people put that online and they're opening their letters. And anything that is designed to evoke and access the feelings of envy is hardly going to be very beneficial for your mental health. If it evokes, I'm loved and I'm supported, that's something very different.
Mm-hmm. Marissa, how do you feel like that interacts with your parenting or perhaps some of the parents that you work with and represent for the state Parent-Teacher Association?
One of the great things, I want to say for at least the past four, potentially 5 years, Hawaii State PTSA, we have an annual convention, and there's always been a topic on the agenda around mental health. It's taking a different approach in terms of focusing on parent mental health to we've now just recently started looking at the impacts of social media. And just the unawareness, or that's not even a word, but, you know, just lack of awareness that parents have of all of the social media platforms that their kids are using, how they're able to communicate using apps that look like standard calculator apps, and just how that has now sort of seeped its way into the school system. We're looking now at, you know, a lot of students in the elementary age now, you know, using social media, digital devices to bully each other. You know, a lot of times that's happening off of the school campus. So there's always these challenges of how do we manage and sort of, you know, ensure that our children are safe. But yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, parents are aware of. They definitely need more education around. I appreciate that the PTA has resources, whether it's on anxiety or bullying, loneliness, grief, that those resources are available to parents to utilize to sort of take a pulse. Like, is my child just spending time in their room because they want to be, you know, on their phone away from everyone else? Or are they actually isolating? A lot of times parents don't know the difference. And so there are resources available to parents to sort of identify, okay, maybe this is a problem. Maybe we need to take this outside of our home and to a pediatrician and such.
Yeah. And David, you know, one thing that really struck a chord with me, you said that your son is almost 4. I have a little boy who's almost 6. And when we were looking at sports for him, the youth sports, and feeling like, oh, we better sign up for baseball. And we started signing, you know, he started when he was almost 4. And I remember thinking, wow, this is really early. And then speaking to another mom who had a son who was quite a few years older, who said, oh, no, you got to start now. Because if you want to get into the good league, you got to get in now. And so I wonder if the resources in Hawaii are more finite or if we are just more competitive. Tell me a little bit about that feeling that you have, right? That, oh, I better expose him to as many things as possible, and we better get a jump on, because otherwise somehow he's going to miss out.
Yeah, what's amazing is that we actually can quantify what you're talking about with sports. So Hawaii Kids Can took part in a national survey of over 20,000 parents through the national organization 50 Can, and so it's called the State of Educational Opportunity in Hawaii. And actually, participation in sports, Hawaii is one of the top states in the nation in terms of the number of kids who are participating in sports. I think overall that's a good thing. However, what I'm concerned about, and this has come up even in conversations with podcasts with folks like Malcolm Gladwell, is kids feeling the pressure and the parents feeling the pressure to have their kids specialize too soon. Like, okay, I want them to be a baseball player. And so, you know, travel baseball and all these different clubs, as opposed to, again, growing up, you know, in the 70s and 80s, kid might just take a whole bunch of different sports that their school offered, and whatever they liked the most, they would kind of gravitate to nationally or naturally. And now there's really this feeling of, okay, we're going to pick a lane and we're going to stay in it and we're going to spend as much money as it takes. And so you have parents who maybe their kid ends up getting an athletic scholarship to a college. Well, it's still not covering the cost of all the work they put into getting that scholarship, and then the kid is burnt out when they get there. So you're hearing reports of even college coaches saying, I actually want kids who dabbled in a whole bunch of different sports, mm-hmm. so they're excited to come and swim for us or play volleyball, and not just like, oh my gosh, this is year 20 of playing whatever this sport is.
Yeah, and Britt, I know that you've done some work in this area, and it sounds like that these sports, as David is saying, may not be a worthwhile investment.
Right. And, you know, it's one of the statistics I recently read was that, you know, baseball takes up all this time, and it is a great sport, a great team sport. But if parents are seeking this MLB contract or something like that, okay, which is quite elusive, 0.1% or whatever, what they're finding is that kids who actually played baseball, statistically, their salaries on average are less than adults who didn't play baseball. And you're thinking, why would that be? They've learned teamwork. They've done this. Because so many financial and family resources went into this particular sport, and they didn't really have time to do much else. Like you're saying, that range, there's a great book called Range, which talks about this, that range of skills wasn't there. And so they got great at this one thing, but they didn't learn this other thing. Another thing Malcolm Gladwell talks about a lot is when you specialize and you intensify somewhere, it always is taken out of another bucket. You may be the best tennis player in the world, but you may not be able to string a sentence together, you know, with another human being. So you always are paying Peter, you know, to pay Paul, or stealing from Peter to pay Paul, whatever the saying is. And that is because the families have finite resources. And so this intensive parenting push, if you look at the long game, it may not actually put your child in the best position.
Right.
Maybe. And nobody talks about that.
Maybe better to be a mathlete than an athlete in terms of the investment. There's a comment from Mark in Hilo, who's a stay-at-home dad of two kids, 11 and 6 years old, and says that electronic devices have impacted behavior, and he finds are detrimental to his kids' behavior. And thank you so much for that comment, Mark. I think that it's not just the electronic devices I find on my children's behavior, because I'm very good, given that they're only 5 and 8. I'm very good at limiting that. It's my own digital addiction, right, that I have this dopamine device in my pocket, and it can be very hard to resist, and it limits my own connection. I mean, if I'm to be perfectly honest, and so I try really hard not to be on it a lot, but I think that does impact my parenting. I mean, Marissa, I'm interested on your thoughts on what Mark shared and just this idea more generally.
Yeah, I was just having this conversation earlier with David when, you know, smart devices started to come out, and a lot of parents were like, I'm going to jump on this. I want my kid to be tech savvy. I want them to have that cutting edge. And just recently we found out, you know, the social impacts of that, having that access too early. I think I have a lot of conversations with parents in the teen space around, you know, when we were kids, if we got upset, you know, our parents sent us to the room, we cried it out, we probably fell asleep. Now, kids go to their room, they log on, they maybe do a search on other kids that are going through the same challenge that they're going through, and now they have validation, not only from kids in their neighborhood, in their school, in Hawaii, across the country. And they now have options of how to deal with that. Where are there options that we never even imagined in terms of how we deal with stress and challenges? And so I think, yeah, it has had a very negative effect on kids.
Mm-hmm. I want to continue that in just a moment. But first, let's go to a caller in just a second. Kay from Kaka'ako is calling in to talk about the impact of stress and loneliness on those with fewer financial resources. And we know that here in Hawaii, financial resources are limited given our high cost of living. Kay, good morning. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to, I guess, share and maybe ask if the panel would like to turn the discussion to those of us who may not have high levels of disposable income. So sports may not really actually be an option, not necessarily even because the cost of the extracurriculars, but the fact that we don't have the time in the day because we're working too much. And the ways in which financial stressors can further exacerbate stress and loneliness. I will share that some of the most loneliest times for me as a mom was the early days because I couldn't be home because I had to be working two jobs. So I just wanted to sort of highlight that and see if the panel might have some comments or discussion around that.
Kay, thank you so much for sharing that. I really felt that in my bones. I know that when I had my daughter 8 years ago, and after maternity leave, I had to go back to work. And holding that baby blanket and pumping in an office was not where I wanted to be, but given the high cost of living, it's where I had to be at that moment. I mean, David, you work with a lot of families who are experiencing challenges financially. Keeping up with the Joneses is one thing. If you have the resources, if you're talking about what Kay is referring to, it becomes that much more difficult.
100%. You know, and again, we were talking about how organized sports is such a big boom in Hawaii. However, it comes with a major caveat. 74% of mid to high income families in the survey report that their kids participate in sports. That drops to 45% for low-income families. So even for a bright spot, it's all being pushed kind of on the top end. And so I think, you know, you have to look at it from several different levels, including the policy level. Are there policies we can pass for better, you know, paid family leave, higher minimum wage, you know, more support for caregivers? Because ultimately, unless we get the resources into the hands of families, it's really, really hard to close that gap. I had a chance to go on a site visit in Denver. The mayor of Denver launched a program a year or two ago called MySpark, and the idea is for middle to low income families, they get $1,000 debit cards they can use specifically for youth mental health purposes to get their kids into dance and sports and tutoring and all these things that they really know that their kids want and need. and now they get that financial support to do so. So we need to be thinking outside the box and try to figure out how do we really get resources directly to families.
Yeah, and Britt, talk about the pressure on parents to overextend themselves financially to pay for those dance lessons or baseball lessons or baseball, you know, practices, if they even can find the time, as Kay was noting. If you work in two jobs, it's pretty hard to drive to practice.
I mean, I am daily in awe of Hawaii parents, I'll be super honest. They are, I call it setting themselves on fire to keep everybody else warm. And it's not necessarily a good way to sustain yourself, but I am always amazed by the amount of sacrifice they're willing to do for their children and try to move their children forward. And that goes for all families of socioeconomic, you know, variety. But what you're alluding to is that those on the lower echelon of the socioeconomic ladder, they can want the things and feel envy and want to have their kids in certain things, and they do not have the means. And yes, ma'am, I mean, I've seen people mortgage their house 3-4 times. I've certainly seen people take out personal loans to send their kids on baseball trips and things. Like, what is that doing in the short term? Okay, it's feeding this need for your child, if we want to call it that. Long term, it is setting you up for even more financial distress. And I can't emphasize enough, and maybe this is for Kay, a little bit of comfort. None of these activities, these intensive parenting experiences that we give our children, do anything if the family system is stressed out, if there's tension, if there's arguing about money. So if I had to choose, I would protect and fiercely protect my finances, my lifestyle, my ability to have a joyous time with my child doing something very simple, as opposed to trying to spend the money to do all of these things. A happy parent, in my opinion, a satisfied parent with their life is the best parent. And so if you can put resources into your own health and support, that will help your child way more than 16 different activities. And you know, but I feel for the case of the world, because what they see is a widening gap between the haves and the have-nots. And I'll be darned, they are not going to have their kids in the have-nots. So they will overextend any way they can. But this is not good for our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. You can join our discussion, too, by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
Support for HPR comes from the Scheidler College of Business at UH Manoa with a virtual coffee hour for the Distance Learning Executive MBA and Master of HR Management on November 14th, scheidler.hawaii.edu/executive.
Younger workers in Portugal are leaving the country in droves. High rents and low wages are pushing them out. The government introduced new tax breaks to get them to stay, but
to be honest, these measures are coming a little bit too late. If they really want to fix the country, they have a long road ahead.
Brain drain in Portugal, that's next time on The World.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for HPR comes from Costco Air Conditioning and Refrigeration, featuring Daikin Air Conditioning Systems. Listing of contractors installing Daikin products, that's Daikin, at CostcoHawaii.com.
Thanks for joining us here on The Conversation. Our guests this morning are Britt Young, therapist with Explore Counseling, David Sun Miyashiro, executive director of Hawaii Kids Can, and Marissa Kuipo Baptista, board member of the Hawaii State Parent Teacher Association. Marissa, you know, we laid out a litany of stressors off the top: money, time pressures, isolation, comparative culture. What sticks out to you in our discussion?
Oh, wow. Well, I did want to touch on real quick Kay's question about, you know, those that don't have maybe the the funds to support, you know, the wants of their child in terms of just extracurricular activities. I know a number of us are part of a hui called He'e that focuses on education in Hawaii. And one of those partners is the After School Alliance. And so they're trying to identify sources of funding that can support the different interests of students outside of the normal standard curriculum within school. So if you know, if you're interested, definitely check out the After School Alliance. They have a lot of great resources to support you. But in terms of what sticks out, definitely the stress, the comparative, the envy that we see that is so prevalent in our society today. You know, I think Britt touched on it very well, that if the kids are saying or noticing that their parents are stressed out, then they internalize that. A lot of the things that we're talking about in terms of, you know, comparative actions between parents, kids are experiencing the same. You know, they're spending a lot of time on social media, and so they're seeing that, you know, kids have certain items or that they're going on these extravagant trips, and they start to question their own selves of, like, why am I not capable? Why is my family not capable? And, you know, that also, too, then becomes another sort of downward spiral.
Yeah, and Britt, we're heading right into the holidays and right smack into the middle of picture-perfect moments on Instagram of vacations and, right. You know, and the presence under the tree and all that brings. Right. How do we keep ourselves level-headed, given all that we've laid out as parents with this upcoming season?
Interestingly enough, you know, I know it's an overused word, so forgive me, but gratitude, you know, there have been studies around how that is the best antidepressant. In fact, it has outcomes similar to taking Wellbutrin every day. So practicing gratitude has this enormous effect. And so some of the things I work with my clients about, especially the ones who are drawn in by social media, is I actually ask them to say the words good for you at the end of every post and like every post and really practice, like, I'm happy for this person, and look what I have, and do, you know, 10 items of gratitude every day. Sometimes we'll do like an alphabet, A through Z. Can you come up with that many things every day that you're grateful for? That can really move the dial, believe it or not. These simple activities can move the dial from, I want my fair share, you know, clenching our fists, I want my fair share, to there's enough to go around for everyone, and I'm actually happy for my friends and family who get to experience these wonderful things. And look what I have. But it has, and then I think it was those, I think the study said those effects last for 30 days. So you practice gratitude, even if you stop, it's 30 days before you start feeling back to that homeostasis. So that's easy, that's free. You know,
I'm thinking gritted teeth. Good for you.
Good for you. I love your diamond ring.
Yeah. You know, but one thing that struck me, Marissa, about what you're talking about and also what Kay brought in is this whole idea. We've heard this, you know, this phrase, it takes a village. Right. And once you have kids, there is this feeling of, hey, wait a minute. Where's my village? Right. Where are the people to back me up? David, can you tell us a little bit more about some resources that may be out there for parents and how we can, you know, if we don't have a traditional village, if our, you know, grandparents don't live on this island, you know, because there's a lot of pressure to say, oh, well, auntie or uncle or somebody else will fill in, but not everybody has that kind of a network.
Exactly. And again, you know, think about how those networks were kind of fractured during the pandemic. And so in some ways, we're really rebuilding what might have existed before, whether or not it was faith-based groups or, you know, parent networks. As a dad, I've looked so many times for resources for dads and, you know, meetups for dads, and it's really hard to find. And I think that's a whole other question of, you know, how do you navigate masculinity in 2024, especially as somebody with a young son, and be a good role model, right? And don't kind of recreate, you know, some of these negative images that we've had maybe growing up, not necessarily from our own parents, but just in society in general. And so, you know, I think finding those people, and sometimes, you know, the internet is actually kind of a double-edged sword. It could be positive. We've connected hundreds of families through our Hawaii Tutoring Plus program, where kids are working together and they have a support network to actually address some of the challenges they're having in school. But I mean, it's a real challenge. And just from a policy perspective, I mean, I think some of these issues are very much on the table, not just in Hawaii, but elsewhere. I mean, more and more states are enacting cell phone bans in schools, and those remain pretty popular amongst many students, parents, and teachers. You also see things like Luddite clubs pop up in more schools around the country where kids are, you know, like basically taking the challenge of, can I get around with just a flip phone, right? And be like, I'm not opting into this whole craziness that's out there. So I think there's a lot more that's coming down the pike for sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, to echo what David was saying, I think also look to your schools, look to your libraries. There are plenty of activities that are focused on community family engagement. I always stress to any organization that I'm a part of, if you have an event, send it out 3 times. I think a lot of times people are like, I sent that flyer out 1 time, nobody responded. Parents are so busy, they need to see something 3 times and they need to see it in different mediums. I need an email that'll be like, oh yeah, I want to sign up for that thing. I need you to send it to me a couple more times for me to actually walk over to my calendar and place it on the calendar, right? And then I need it in a medium that I can share with other friends to, you know, bring a partner along. But there are opportunities there. We just probably, from maybe a community organization, even from a government perspective, we need to be able to push more information out to the community.
And plus one to the libraries. I am a big fan of our state library system and our state librarian, and my kiddo loves story time at the public library. And it's a great way to meet other families who live in your neighborhood.
Right.
And you have, you know, with the holidays coming up, I know several of the libraries have their own Santa events. So if you go to look at the Hawaii Public Library site, there's a whole list of events for pretty much every branch in the state.
Yep.
Yeah, we are regulars there as well. If you are just joining us, we're talking about the stress of parenting. We want to know how you feel this in your own lives. So please join our discussion. Give us a call, 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. You know, Britt, we talked a little bit about this, the stress that a stressed parent has on their own children. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the data shows? If I am stressed, not to stress parents out even more, say, you can't be stressed, you're stressing out your kids, but what is the impact of that on our child? Even if you don't express it verbally, they can feel it.
Oh, I call children little antennae. You know, you can imagine them walking around with little antennae and they're picking up, they're sort of scanning the environment. Is this a happy space? Is this a safe space? Is it dangerous? So children are just born knowing how to do that. And so we could be stressed about, I don't know, the lawnmower not working. But they don't know that. They just know mom is walking around looking a type of way and sounding a type of way and projecting maybe her frustration on a child. And so I always say children know you're angry. They know you're stressed. They don't know why. And so one of the first things that kids do from a very early age is if they can't figure out why mom's upset, they go, okay, it's something I did. And then they go into this internal space. So when we are of course, once in a while, we're just going to be stressed out. That's just life. But if we are consistently and chronically stressed, you can imagine a child feeling that heaviness, that burden in the home, wondering, what is this about? And going, I must be the cause of this. And then this is where we run into depressive mood, we run into anxious personalities, we can run into self-harm. And they are walking around reflections of their home life. And it's not great, no.
You know, Marissa, David talked about the library as a great place to build community. I wonder where you found good places to build community as a parent. And I think about this just as a mom myself. The more open I am about how I'm feeling, the more I find that other moms and dads are willing to share and are grateful for that space, that no, everything is not perfect. I am a little duck on water paddling furiously with my flippers underneath and trying to look like I'm cruising. But tell us about how you found community with other parents.
Yeah, I think, you know, in addition to the library, our local parks are great, you know, places to meet other parents, but also just within the schools. I think the schools have a lot of activities that they are focused on community engagement. And so at the start of a school, there's typically some type of open house where you're meeting the teacher and you're meeting other parents. Whether it's in a PTA meeting or a student council meeting, there are parents there that are interested in being engaged. They're all free, so there's no cost. You sort of just show up and you kind of just pick and choose sort of, do I want to be engaged? Maybe I'm here just for the social aspect. That's totally fine. But like I said, there are, I think the hubs currently in Hawaii, and there could be more, are typically going to be like your libraries, your schools, and sort of your parks for families.
And Britt, tell us a little bit about how leading with that vulnerability can be powerful.
You know, there was an interesting study about how nervous people get about talking to strangers. Mm-hmm. So they set people up on a subway. Some people talked to a stranger on a subway, some didn't. And they all said, I don't think that person's going to want to talk to me. Like, they just want to be alone. And it turns out, of course, that not only the rider, but the person they engage with both felt happier about the subway ride when there was conversation. In a home, in a state where humility is prized, and it's a lovely concept, we might also think, I don't want to bother this person. I don't want to talk to them. I certainly don't want to share my dirty laundry because that feels burdensome to the other person. And I'm here to say that the data just does not back that up. What actually flushes out in the data set is that people like to understand that they're not alone. They connect with you better when you tell them a story, and if that story has vulnerabilities, even better. And so whatever this inner chatter might be around, don't bother, they probably don't want to, they're probably too busy, if you can look at that chatter and go, maybe not. Is this absolutely true? Well, maybe not. Maybe they'd want to talk to me. And I like to tell people, too, I say, you know, when you meet someone, it's oftentimes, you know, let's get together soon. Oh, let's do it. I think, are you busy next Thursday? Mm-hmm. Are you busy next Friday? Let's lock it down. And that puts it on the calendar, like you were saying, and it puts that event and holds it in place. But yes, to your point, Yunji, connective stories are vulnerable stories. I don't really care to be friends with someone who's perfect. I'm sorry. Do not apply for that position. Only flawed people need apply to be my friend anyway.
Far less interesting.
Yeah.
David, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, and kind of thinking again, Kay's point has really stuck with me this whole conversation, you know, thinking about how schools can be that kind of central hub for building in-person quality relationships. And yet, you know, as hard as our state is working, public preschool is not available to every family in the state, right? So you think about all the connections that could have been there but aren't because of resources. Or even within schools, also from our survey, we are behind, or we're ahead of only 7 other states in terms of the question. Parents answering they're very satisfied with how the school supports their child's mental health needs. So that's only 31% as a state average. So if our kids are not doing okay, just as we can kind of, you know, trickle down to them, they can trickle to us for sure. I know when my kid has a hard day at school, it impacts, you know, my frustrations and my mental health. And so, you know, thinking about what else can we get quality resources into the schools, and then what more can we do to help our families get into schools if, you know, the public pre-K is not an option.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you touched on sort of what are those mental health resources within the school. I know a lot of Hawaii public schools use the Panorama survey. So they're identifying from an SEL stance sort of where are there areas where maybe parents need to pay a little bit more attention to provide support to their students. And I know also that, you know, we have purchased a package or a program with Hazel Health. There's also CAMHD, the Children and Adolescent Mental Health Division within the Department of Health. So those resources are available, but whether or not parents are aware of them, how to utilize them, and even the great thing about Hazel Health, there's telehealth. You know, a principal came up to me the other day. My daughter is a bit shy. She's our youngest of three. So, of course, she's competing with two other rowdy kids. And so she's just sort of now finding her voice. But principal came up to me and she's like, you know, I don't know if you know, we have this Hazel Health program available to her. If she just wants to, you know, it's telehealth, anytime she can dial in and get the support that she needs. So, you know, it was great. It didn't ask the principal, but she just felt free to, you know, share that information. And I think we need to have more conversations like that, where people feel free to sort of say, you know, I know this is maybe a sensitive topic, but I'm here to help.
Mm-hmm. And David, what you're bringing in also is really changing some pretty big policy ideas. And, you know, you think about the legislative session coming up, not to add another thing to the parental to-do list, but the voice of parents definitely needs to be present in those legislative meetings.
For sure. And, you know, there's so much uncertainty, I think, at the national level that a lot of those policy conversations have to happen here at home. You know, making sure parents are aware of, you know, are issues like parental leave and, you know, support for caregivers? Are those being discussed at the legislature? And if they are, you know, again, we don't make it easy for folks to participate, but even sending in written testimony can be incredibly powerful because there aren't a lot of parent voices usually at the table. So when one does come in, people pay attention. So I would highly recommend folks to reach out to groups like the Hawaii State PTSA, like Hawaii Kids Can and others, to make sure you're aware of some of the things happening this year.
Yeah, Brett, I want to go back to where we started with Vivek Murthy, the findings from the U.S. Surgeon General. Nearly half of parents, 48%, on most days, they feel completely overwhelmed by stress. We are all parents in this room, and what's unique about this panel is that we all have kids at the various stages, right? David's got a toddler, I'm in the elementary school age, you're in middle and high school, and Brett, you're almost on the other side with a high schooler and two in college. Do you think, you know, we tend to think of parents being the most stressed in the baby years, but how does it differ over time?
That's a good question. Reflecting on some of those early years, you know, lots of labor and lots of time and energy put into the child. 0 to 10, I would say the labor is just enormous. But what happens later is that is more physical labor. It does feel like cognitive labor comes later, where you're like holding your tongue and reminding yourself, don't take that horrible thing she said personally. She doesn't really hate you. So it's this very interesting shift, and always fun when you have one in one stage and one in the other, where you're like, oh my God, vacillating. But, you know, the implications, to be fair, the implications are bigger with teenagers in some ways. Like, the acting out isn't a tantrum necessarily, but it could be getting a tattoo that you don't want them to get, or engaging in sexual behavior. Anyway, so these acting out behaviors seem to have longer lasting implications. So that's why parents of teenagers, you'll see them. We're the ones with the gray hair walking around like, oh my gosh, what happened? Because they could really do some long-term damage to their lives. But don't get me wrong, early days, I mean, changing diapers, tying shoes, I was physically exhausted, but cognitively, I knew that they were still under my control.
Yeah, Marissa, yeah. I see you nodding over there.
I was in a therapy session for one of my kids, and I mean, I think we all know the acronym BRAT. If your kid is sick, you know, give them bread, give them rice, give them applesauce toast. And this therapist shared, you know, that doesn't stop when they become teenagers. So she gave me the acronym of HALT. Are they hungry? Are they anxious? Are they lonely? Mm. Are they tired? And I was like, another acronym? Like, okay. Like, and so, but it works. I mean, I cycle through. And so one of the things becoming a parent of a teenager is I miss that period where we kind of just jumped to speaking to them like they're adults, right? And so now there's a lot of conversation that I wasn't necessarily prepared for of, you know, how do you feel? And not only how do you feel, but can you actually describe it and name it? Because you maybe you're not really angry, maybe you're tired or anxious, but, you know, I think we always just jump to those easy terms. And a lot of times parents have to remind themselves, and I do this a lot now, is that I'm reminding myself, Marissa, you are the parent. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have to get down in the dirt with the kids and go back and forth. You are the parent. Mm-hmm. Take a breath and, you know, kind of talk through it. And so, yeah. Yeah. These teenage years.
Dude.
Buckle up.
Yeah, I have to remind myself, you know, he's mad because he has to put a shoe on. And it's just a shoe.
Yes.
But, you know, when you think about on a macro level what parents are anxious about, you know, again, from our survey, Hawaii is near the bottom in terms of how confident parents feel about, are their kids going to have quality economic opportunities in the state? Are they going to be ready for higher education? So they're thinking about their kids are going to leave the state because they either can't afford to be here or there's not the right opportunities for them. And so, you know, I am not rushing things. I'll take this toddler stage for all of the sleepless nights and the big temper tantrums because, you know, I think there are some major systemic challenges facing so many of our parents.
Yeah, and I think it really goes back to what Kay was talking about, you know, working two jobs. And we know that there are so many, you know, half the state is an Alice family, right? Where you are working very hard, but you are perhaps, you know, a car breakdown or, you know, a minor mental or a minor physical health issue away from missing rent and all the stress that provides. And so we are just so rushed. I think that that is a thing in my own life that I often remind myself, like, okay, he can't tie his shoes, but it's okay to be a little bit late, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We are almost to the end of our program, and so I want to give you each an opportunity for a final thought. As we, you know, we started talking about intensive parenting and all the stress that parents are feeling right now. We're heading into the holidays. Marissa, what do you say to parents out there who might be listening right now and feeling overwhelmed?
Yeah, I think the theme of you are not alone is powerful, and find your community, whether that's finding your community in your local park, at your library, in your school. You know, look for other people and be vulnerable. Find those connections to get you through.
Yeah, David.
Yeah, well, first of all, folks can go to hawaiikidscan.org to read all of our survey results. But for me, I just try to remember, you know, you'll know your child much more as an adult than as a child. And so just really try to appreciate all of the ups and downs that parenthood can bring.
Mm-hmm. And Britt, take us home.
Yeah, I think a happy, satisfied, well-adjusted parent, it will always be the best parent. And I heard one time about love your child, keep them safe, accept them for who they are, and kind of get out of the way. This is this simplified view that was around for eons that's only changed in the last, you know, 30, 40 years. And we have to remember that if you want to intensely parent your child, of course you should, if you feel like that's what's best. But I believe you can parent smarter, not harder. Find the dials that really move for your child. It may not be 16 sports. It may be artistic things, musical things. And so instead of trying to follow the leader, find out who your child is, find out who they want to be, and nurture that.
Yeah, and again, tell us that gratitude practice.
Okay, so gratitude practice. So A through Z, once a day, try to find something that starts with the letter A that you're grateful for, B, C, and go all the way down. And don't forget to scroll through your social media saying, good for you.
Try that.
26 things in alphabetical order every day, but the effects will be long lasting. I really love that. And you said 30 days it lasts.
It lasts 30 days, even if you quit. And if you go off antidepressants, sometimes it doesn't last that long. So you're better off to do this as a long-term practice every day.
Thank you so much. Thank you, of course, to our guest, Marissa Kuipo-Baptista, board member of the Hawaii State Parent Teacher Association, Britt Young, therapist with Explore Counseling, and David Sun Miyashiro, executive director of Hawaii Kids Can. We, of course, thank you, our listener, for joining us on today's show, especially all you parents out there. Have a comment to share about our program? Call our talkback line at 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you'd like to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Yenji Denise, in for Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for much more of The Conversation. Aloha.